everybody. It's Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine. Welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience Podcast here on ChicagoJazz.com. I am really excited to be able to talk with guitarist Oz Noy. He is coming back into Chicago May 9th at Reggie's as part of a group called Mushulu. Hopefully I said that correctly. But Oz, you've got this new recording that is out as of this past March, Boogaloo Galoo, and I want to talk all about that. But thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So let's just jump in real fast, since this is, we'll do a little plugging here at the front end for all of our Chicago listeners. You're coming into Reggie's, which I think you've played at before. I know you play Martyrs a lot when you come through town, but Reggie's is another great spot. And you've got quite a group you're coming in town with here at Reggie's. You've got Dennis Chambers, Jeff Berlin, David Sanchez, hopefully I said that correctly, and yourself.
David Sanchez.
So talk a little bit about this group, because, I mean, I know I've seen you touring with Dave Weckl and Jimmy Halsip, and I think that's one of your regular touring bands, but I haven't seen you with this configuration.
Well, this band, that's not my band. It's kind of like a collaborative of, it's like an all-star band of the four of us. I got called kind of last minute for this band a couple of months ago. I guess they were planning on doing something for a while, and then whoever the guitar player kind of bailed out, so they called me. So it's a new situation for me. We've played this one big festival in Havana, and we're just trying to cut. It's a great band, you know. Obviously, everybody's great. We're just kind of trying to put something kind of unique together with all of us, you know.
You know, the one thing that I've noticed with you and your playing career and all that. I mean, you play with so many different configurations of musicians and groups, and even in your own stuff. I mean, you've got, you know, we talked right before we came on, Keith Carlock, you've got Dave Weckl, you've got Dennis Chambers, you've got James Genius, you've got Will Lee. I mean, is it just because you're living in New York now, it's just organically like, hey, man, can you guys do this session or that session, or is it kind of thought out to the point of specific to the music that you're setting up to play that time?
Well, there's certain guys that I just like their playing, you know what I mean, a lot, and they really fit what I do. So there's a bunch of those guys in New York that I use, and then there's a bunch of those guys, you know, like Weka lives in L.A., so I don't do local stuff with him. I do tours with him, and when a part of the tour, we'll play, like, the Iridium and places like that, or, like, I don't know if you play with Vinny Colaiuta or Steve Ferroni. It's like, but so when I'm local in New York, actually Keith Carlock doesn't live in New York anymore. So, but when I play here in New York, I use local guys. I just use the guys that I like. So Will lives in New York. James Genus lives in New York. So when I can use them, I use them, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. And you've got this new recording, and you've got quite a mixture of musicians on this recording, too. So it's Boogaloo Galoo, and this is your ninth solo recording. It just came out in March. And this is a little different than stuff I've heard. Well, I mean, your playing is, you know, obviously Oz Noy, but I mean, from a musical selection, you've got quite a mixture of tunes on here as opposed to some of your other past recordings. I mean, you've got tunes by the Beach Boys, Ray Charles, Thelonious Monk, the Beatles. I mean, how did you first off come up with a repertoire for this recording? And I'm assuming that it's kind of got a booga boogaloo, kind of a boogaloo basis off of this.
Exactly. Well, the way I make records is I like to come up with a concept for a record before I even write. So it's just an example, like a bunch of years ago I did Twisted Blues, I did volume 1 and volume 2, so it was like the idea was like taking blues forms, meaning like chord blues changes, and the harmonically changing them and use the different rhythms and stuff. So I like to take like an idea and develop it in a record, like a concept. So that was more of a blues concept. Then the record after, Who Gives a Funk, I was more like going for like a kind of soul, funk, kind of James Brown kind of thing. So on this album, the idea was Boogaloo. So that's kind of what inspires me to write when I have a specific idea of a direction of where the record is going to be. Then I can start collecting the tunes that will fit it or write for that idea. So the Beatles tune, it's actually not a boogaloo. It's like a shuffle. It's just something that I've done for a while and kind of fit the thing. The Beach Boys song, it's just one of the greatest songs of all times, and I always wanted to play it. So I just had to find a way to make it work for me. You know, God only knows it's such a great tune. And then Ray Charles is just, it's another tune that just fits the guitar. Monk music is really interesting because I recorded a Monk tune almost on every one of my records. And the thing with Thelonious Monk, his writing really fits the guitar, for me at least, for my playing. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of make it whatever you want, you know, once you play it. So I was kind of thinking about, this record is kind of basically a mix of Boogaloo meets Bitches Brew. So that I recorded the version of Monk, Bemsha Swim, is basically like if it were to be like on the Bitches Brew record, you know, that was kind of the vibe. Oh, but that's how I operate, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And you've got a lot of different artists on here joining you as well. I mean, did you kind of think about what tune you're putting down and say, you know what, maybe I'll get, you know, this guy and this guy and this guy on this tune because of their playing, because of the way I'm playing, or did it just organically happen?
Yeah, it kind of, yes, but the main thing is to get the right rhythm section on the tracks. That's the most important thing. So for that, I kind of have an idea what will work for whoever I wanted to use, and then I just have to hope that they're available, really, you know? So, in terms of the soloist or, like, the special guest, that is a little looser. Like, a lot of times I'll play a song, and I go, like, oh, maybe it needs a piano solo, maybe it needs a flute solo, maybe it doesn't need a solo. So it's just kind of depending on the situation. But the rhythm section is the most important thing, because that's really what gives it the sound, the color of the tune, you know, the character of the tune.
Yeah, no, you know, and I always like talking to artists that, you know, are around in your generation, because, you know, if you talk to, like, the older guy, you know, 70s, whatever, late 60s, 70s, 80s, and things like that, they're coming from a different influential group of music, you know. So if it's jazz standards, that's what they're playing, and a lot of their music sounds that way. Seems like you must have been influenced by a lot of different music, you know, coming into this. And it says in kind of the description for this, you know, jazz meets R&B grooves and boogaloo and everything else. So is this all stuff you grew up listening to and really influenced in your playing? So now it's starting to come out?
Well, I think what I grew up listening to, well, first of all, I grew up on the Beatles.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
8 days a week, that's right there, you know.
It's like the opposite of what your guitar playing sounds like to me. You know?
Well, you know, I really love songwriting. I love songs, great songs. And the Beatles is the, you know, the masters of songwriting. So I grew up on that. I really love melodies and stuff. So, but then when I start playing and get into jazz, then I would say that what I grew up was a mix of, like, actually, I started listening to more like electric jazz, and then I got back into more like bebop, and then it was the same thing with kind of, I started listening to like heavy rock, kind of 80s stuff, and then I went back to blues, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I, kind of where I started, and I think my playing is really a mix of bebop and blues, you know?
Yep.
So that's where things are at. And in terms of like other influences, like, you know, there's a record by Lou Donaldson called Alligator Boogaloo. So I got aware of that record when I moved to New York. So, and you know, I think like the classic Boogaloo tune of all times, like I think it's like the tune is the Sidewinder by Lee Morgan, and I grew up on that record. So I never thought about making a record in that kind of style or like. But I'm sure it was kind of around me when I was listening to those records, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, and also, you know, since we're talking about kind of like, you know, you're growing up, you're listening to the Beatles, and then you're getting, you know, you probably went down the wormhole, right? Because you're listening to the Beatles, and then you found this guy and that guy, and then when you got into jazz, maybe you listened to some fusion, and then you went down that way, and all of a sudden you found this and that. How did you develop your sound? Like, you know, if you're talking about the Beatles, you're talking about, you know, Thelonious Monk, straight ahead jazz, things like that, but you use so many different sounds in your playing specifically. I mean, what started influencing you when you got into doing, you know, what took you down that road? Because a lot of guys will say, oh man, you know, I'm kind of a purist classic rock and roll or whatever, I'm a purist jazzer, I'm not going to go down the road with all these different sounds and pedal, you know. I know you use the pedal board, and I know you use a lot of different I think even a synthesizer, kind of organ sound sometimes with the guitar. What started you down that road? I mean, what was the influence?
I think the thing that's different for me from a lot of people is when I started to play, I always played both things. Like, I always played jazz and rock. So what it is I always had, like, this pop sensitivity because I've been doing – a lot of people doesn't know that about me, but I've been doing recording sessions since I'm 15.
Yeah, you were, a super famous pop star over in Israel, weren't you?
No, I wasn't super famous. I was just playing. I was in a house band on TV, so people recognized me for, 2 years, and I probably wasn't on TV a lot. But also, I just played with the pop stars there, you know what I mean? But the thing with me was I always played jazz, and a lot of, over the years, people told me, oh, you can't do both. You have to decide, either you're playing jazz or you're playing rock. But I also always played rock, and I played on records and recordings and did, pop gigs. And I always loved it. It's like the Beatles. You know, I love songs. I love playing songs. So I think that the thing about the sounds came from the fact that I was doing studio work and I was playing pop gigs, because that's what it's about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I mixed it with the jazz stuff, I just found a way to mix it where I can use my favorite sound, but in that other genre, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's pretty much what it is. It's not that and of course a lot of things got developed when I moved to New York and I started to write for my records and play live, that things got developed. But I always had a feel for it already because I was doing it. That was kind of my work in Israel, you know?
Sure. Well, when you...
And actually, when I moved to New York, I've done, you know, like, I always done both, even in New York. I never wanted to do one thing. So I played in some R&B bands and rock, not quite rock bands, but like singer-songwriter stuff. Actually, I don't know if you know who Gavin DeGraw is. Like a pop star. He's got a bunch of big hits.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of really big hits. So I played, when I moved to New York, I played with him. I had a steady gig with him. I was like his guitar player till he got discovered and became famous. Even then I've done stuff with him. But, you know, I was always in that world here also, you know?
Seems like you've got, I mean, and I think that it's probably... You know, I think it's also the generation too, right? Because as you're coming up, I mean, you just love all kinds of music, it seems, and you, I bet you love melodies. That's probably something that really is drawn to you. So I'm sure, like playing something, you know, four chords every single night of the week, the same exact way, isn't something that would maybe appeal to you. But I bet that melody above it is something that
actually
sparks
don't mind.
Something.
You know, I don't, because I've done pop gigs and I've done. Like singer-songwriter stuff, and I've got plenty of recordings. I don't have a problem playing good songs where it's just four chords and you play the same stuff. I like it there's a real art to songwriting, and I really appreciate it because I'm a big fan of it, and I also play it with other people. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's like there's that whole jazz snob kind of vibe where, you know, the jazz guys, oh, we got better harmony, we play more complicated, we do this, we do that. I'm not into that. You know, I just like beautiful music, whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
Well, if it's three chords, sure. Why not?
Well, the three chords can be played horribly, too. So,
correct. Pretty horribly, yeah.
Let's talk about the rhythm sections, obviously, because especially when you're touring, you know, as a trio with your group, and I know you were just in town with Jimmy Haslip and Dave Weckl and you, and I mean, how important is it? And I mean, you guys are playing in odd time signatures, you're doing a lot of different things, but as a trio, as a guitar player, you must feel, I mean, I don't know if you feel this way, but it seems like you're more exposed because now it's like bass, drums, and you. So how important is having that group behind you? And also, who do you, I mean, like what conceptual stuff do you look for in a person to play behind you? Because there's a million drummers, but not all of them can play behind Oz Noy.
Well, first of all, I've been doing a trio before I moved to New York. Even this, my kind of idea of this band, you know, even started in Israel. So I'm kind of used to playing a trio. A part of the reason why I started to use effects more kind of intensively is because in a trio situation, you got a lot more space. So I wanted to kind of color in different ways with effects. So the trio thing was always been around. Now, the thing about the rhythm section is with the music that I do, I consider it to be like electric jazz, but we're just not swinging. We swing a little bit, but it's mostly like more R&B groove than funk groove.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more like groove music mixed with jazz improvisation. So it's a different thing when you have to find the right guys that knows how to do that, that have a really strong groove but can open it up a little also. And it's really hard to find those guys. There's not a lot of guys that really know how to do it. There's a lot of great jazz players. There's a lot of great groove players. There's a lot of great rock players. But there's very few people that actually know how to do that middle, you know,
mm-hmm.
to mix it. So the guys that play with me, they're just the guys that I like how they do what I need them to do. They have really strong groove, but they can also open it up. So they're like jazz musicians that can do the groove stuff. And there's not a lot of those around. There's only a few that can actually do that kind of thing. It's kind of a very specific kind of thing, you know? That's pretty much what's behind it in terms of how important it is. It's as important as anything, because if there's a trio, if one person is weak, then it's just really hard, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And when everybody is strong and there's a good communication, then the music sounds like it's supposed to sound, you know?
Do you find, like, you know, I mean, living in New York and all that stuff, I mean, do you find that it really makes a difference in how you play and your sound? Because you can't go and do an Oz Noy gig and then have somebody like what you just said in a weak position, because it wouldn't sound like you, probably, if you're worried about a drummer that's kind of, you know, not quite on, or a bass player that's not quite on. So, I mean, living in New York, you got a lot to choose from, but I know that you end up with, like, a lot of the heavy-duty guys, so they must love playing with you as well, because I don't know how many people play your style of music, so it must be a kind of an equal, you know, equal thing where you're happy to have them, but they're happy to be playing with you as well.
I hope, I guess. I hope they do. Well, you know, yeah, that's one aspect of it. You know, when I tour, if you go out with some for a month, you can't not have the right people.
Right.
Because that will be painful.
Right.
Also, on tour, you kind of go to this, like, you have, everything gets tighter and you play really great, and then suddenly you get into a rut and it goes down and it goes up. So you have to have the right guys that are consistent, you know, because if you don't, then your tour is going to be hell.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like musically. When I play in New York, it's like most of the gigs that I do here, it's almost kind of like live rehearsals for me. You know, I try stuff and I work on my next records and all that stuff. So obviously I try to use the guys that I like all the time. But I also sometimes open it up and try other guys just to see what comes up. And a lot of times, even if whoever I'm using is not quite what I like or what I would like it to sound like, it, you know, it gives a different angle where it just makes me sound different, or makes me kind of inspires me, you know? So it's like a different thing between playing locally and playing on tour and recording records, you know?
You know, that makes a ton of sense. And I mean, you know, looking over your schedule, I mean, it seems like you're always... Do you plan it out? I mean, you're pretty much always out. Maybe you're back in New York for a couple of weeks, and then you're back out on the road.
No, it's not. You know, these days with Facebook and all that stuff, I have this thing. I said, like, you play a gig in Canada, and everybody thinks you're on a world tour. You know what I mean? No, it really is, because the social media makes everything so much bigger than what it is a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like, people see you go out for 2 days somewhere to play, and people make a big deal of it. It's like, oh, he's on tour all year, you know?
Right.
Stupid. So I'm in and out. I'm more in than out, actually, in terms of the amount of time that I spend in New York. Mm-hmm. It depends. Now I have a new record out, so I finished a month tour. But really, you know, I finished it in March. My next tours for this album are starting in October.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's like I have other things going on, but it's like, it's not as much as it looks a lot of times. It's like, you know, I may have things in the middle a little bit, but the actual real tours, there's not that many of them happening throughout the year, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and I guess you're right, because, I mean, of course, you probably fly out. You can fly out, go do a one-off here, there, wherever, and keep your schedule busy. But then when you're actually on tour with your group, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And you're out. You know, one-offs
are really hard to do because it's really expensive to do a one-off, and yeah. a lot of the times it doesn't make sense to do it unless it's a festival that invites you. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah. We could probably talk for an hour about the touring and the music business, but
yeah,
man, oh man. But you yeah. know, so this new recording, Booga Boogaloo, is it's out. Is the best place to send people to oznoy.com or Amazon? It's probably up on everything, right?
Well, the best way, you know, iTunes, Amazon, Abstract Logic is the record company. So that you go on Abstract Logic, you get it. You can go on my website. There's links to the record. Yeah, it's everywhere. You can get it anywhere.
I'll tell you, the recording, it sounds amazing. And I love all
Thank
of the
you.
Different. It just sounds like this recording compared to the other ones, it seems like you're playing different repertoire, but you're playing... It just sounds different. Like each track is kind of like a different statement to me.
I'm happy you say that because when you make, this is my ninth album, it's really hard to keep it fresh and different. It's really, really hard. And if I wouldn't have it in me, I wouldn't make those records anymore. So it's really nice to hear because, you know, I try to make a big effort to not do the same thing twice.
Well, and it's probably tough too, because I mean, in this genre of music, I mean, it's probably pretty easy to get into a, you know, I mean, you're throwing down, you're playing grooves and it starts going. And the next thing you know, you crank out 10 tunes and you listen back and say, hey, this kind of all sounds the same. If you listen to it,
yeah.
you know, in a fluid thing, it sounds great live. But this one really in particular, really is impressive.
Thank you.
So hopefully everybody gets out and checks that out. And of course they can check everything out at oznoy.com. And for those Chicago listeners, he's coming into Reggie's, and let me give it another plug here, May 9th, reggieslive.com for tickets, and it's Oznoy, Dennis Chambers, Jeff Berlin, and David Sanchez. And man, the band's going to be smoking. Do you have any idea what kind of tunes you're going to be playing with these guys when you're
Yeah, we've it's kind of a, you know, it's a collaboration of all of us, so I'm going to bring one or two new songs. David's going to bring some of his tunes. Some of them are old from his older records. Some of them are new. Jeff Berlin, same thing, bring some tunes. I don't know if Dennis, I think Dennis was talking about a certain one or two tunes. So it's just like, it's just kind of a combination of the four of us. And then we're playing it, you know, and everybody's got their own thing. So we hopefully come up with a kind of a unique sound to it, you know.
Yeah, hopefully.
That's what I hope for.
Hey, are you guys just doing this one in and out, or are you going out on a couple of days?
No, we're on tour. We got like 10 days or something, and then we got some stuff in Europe. And yeah, no, we're...
So you're going to be out with them for a little while then, too.
Yeah. It's like a week. It's like 10 days in May, and I think 2 weeks in Europe in July, something like that.
Oh man,
it's a new band, you know. It's like kind of put it together. We're trying to build something, you know.
You know, actually, last question, since we're talking about this group and then also your group, and we talked a little bit about touring and stuff. I mean, this type of music, I mean, it's got to be tough to find the right venue to go to play, like, let's say, with your group when you're touring. Or have you been doing it so much that you have kind of a network of clubs that you know that you can hit and they work,
you know,
with the genre?
The thing is, there's only so many clubs in the U.S. and everybody plays the same clubs.
Right.
It's just, there's actually not that many of them. And what I do basically fits the jazz clubs, you know, like the Blue Note or the Iridium or like the stuff, you know, places like that.
Mm-hmm.
So any of those kind of jazz clubs in the big cities, that's where me or anybody like me play, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whether it's a little more straight ahead or it's a little more electrified, those are the places that you play. So there's not a lot of them, believe it or not, in the U.S., but it's like, they're very specific. It's actually not a big... You know where you're going to find this kind of music, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or jazz in general.
Right, exactly. And I mean, you keep coming through Chicago and all that, and I know Martyrs is one of your home bases here
yeah.
in Chicago, because, I mean, you know, They're awesome over there. Ray, the owner over there, he's a dynamite guy, and they always are very interested in having all sorts of different music. But that seems like the perfect club for what you're doing. So we're glad you found a little home base here in Chicago. And, awesome. Of course, everybody should go check out osnoy.com and iTunes, Amazon, and everywhere else you can pick up recordings. So for the Booga Boogaloo, I can't believe I didn't.
Booga Loogaloo.
I knew I was going to screw it up. I knew I was going to screw it up. There's two. Tell me Lugas. Booga Loogaloo.
Yeah, it's cool. It's good. Close enough.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I'm just a drummer with a podcast here, so I know. So anyways, hey, Oz, thanks so much for being on today, and I really appreciate everything. And, man, I'm looking forward to seeing you in Chicago again May 9th and also with your group, and maybe you'll be coming back through in the fall at some point. So we'll keep you posted, and we'll make sure everybody knows about it.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Oz. Take care. And thanks, for everyone, for listening to Talkin' Jazz.